Maximize cloud efficiency with Doit, the trusted partner in multi-cloud management for thousands of companies worldwide. Visit doit.com. That's doit.com. Doit, your cloud simplified.
Packet pushers.
Welcome to Day 2 Cloud, and today we've got a very special and unusual sort of an episode. We're not recording the intro after the show like Ned and I usually do because we just wanted to hit it with what is happening today. And that is, this is my last show on Day 2 Cloud. I'm no longer going to be the co-host with Ned. Sad face, Ned. Well, let's be honest, Ned. What's happening here is you got sick of me and you're kicking me out. I'm done, right?
I mean, that was about the size of it. Absolutely. I was like, Banks, you've just become too much. And I need something new. I need a fresh perspective in the show. And, you know, you're an old man who loves networking. And that's the truth of it.
Now, that hurts, but that is not wrong. That is not wrong. I am an old man who loves networking. That is true.
No, that is not at all the case. And I guess we've kept her in the wings for too long already. We do have a new co-host that will be joining me, and that's Kyler Middleton. Hi, Kyler.
Hi, everyone. This is very exciting. And I guess I'm the fresh new face, but I still do love networking. So never fear on that side.
Yes. Yeah, we're going to get into that along the way here. This episode, folks, is going to be me transitioning out, Kyler transitioning in, and you having the opportunity to meet Kyler and find out what she is all about. So, Kyler, let's start with that. Who are you and what do you do?
I don't know. That's a hard problem to answer. I have a day job where I work in the healthcare sector in the United States as a DevOps engineer, and that means everything. As most people in DevOps know, you wear all of the hats, which is challenging and fun. And according to my mom, I work on computers and that's it. It's something like Google.
That's what all our moms think we do. Yeah.
Yep.
But outside of that, I come at technology from a solve hard problems, teach everybody else how to do it. And that way I can just kick my feet up.
You said DevOps engineer in the healthcare sector. That's your primary day job. So
yeah.
What are the products that you work with day to day, like Terraform and that kind of stuff? Or
yeah, as much as I can. I'm with Ned, part of the Hashi Ambassadors program. So like lots of Terraform, lots of Vault, lots of EKS and Kubernetes these days. And just writing automations for Azure DevOps and GitHub and TFS and all the things. So we talked earlier before the show started, I have goldfish memory and I will forget how to solve these problems if I don't write them down. And code is a great way to write things down because I can just run it next time and it'll do the thing. And I look like I remember where I'm at.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Let me ask you a question. How many times have you done a Google search for a problem and got your own blog back as the result?
It's starting to happen more and more as I have almost 100 of like these Terraform edge case blogs out here. And if you Google my name, you'll find me because it's unique enough. And I do the same thing sometimes and find, oh, like I knew this 18 months ago. This code looked real great. Let's see if it works.
How good are you at commenting your code?
I am pretty good at it because, again, I will forget what I was doing there. And so I encourage that. I recently committed to the Terraform Azure provider and I found no comments in anything I looked at, which was very strange. So I did a PR and I added tons of comments and they didn't object. So we'll see. We're going to change that culture yet.
I, too, have tried to look through the source code for a data source in the past or a resource and realize there's no comments. And since I don't know Go, I'm just completely lost at what any of this stuff is doing. And it took me more time than I'd like to admit to unravel it. I did eventually get to the cause and managed to fix an existing issue, which I felt pretty good about. But yeah, comments are kind of clutch.
I had Copilot explain every single line to me and then help me write the new stuff. And then I stamped my name on it, despite it actually being Copilot mostly. And it worked. Worked great. So let's bring on that AI.
You mentioned your day job is DevOps engineering, but you also have a bit of a side hustle in terms of blogging, and you've created at least one course on Pluralsight. So do you think of yourself as an educator as well?
I think of myself primarily as an educator. And I know some of the folks that operate with me will be surprised because I'm a DevOps engineer. I'm hide in the closet, work on computers. But I have never been that traditional sit in the closet in a dark room engineer. My formal college education was to be a librarian because I like finding stuff. I like helping people find what they need. And so as much as I can, I just solve hard problems so that I have something to talk about and teach people. And so outside of my just primary day job, where of course I am trying to teach everyone around me everything I find out each day, I speak at as many conferences as will permit me in. And I have a pretty active blog on Medium about every time I solve a puzzle, I go and write about it so people can come and find it. And just try and be on podcasts like this. And now you're flipping the chair on me because I was on this podcast about a year ago. And so now I will just get to talk to smart people and hear about their stories and in turn, share all the cool stuff they did with everyone I talked to. So this works out great for me.
Yeah, I think one of the biggest challenges when you're interviewing a very technical person is to draw out the information in a way that others can understand, because in their mind, they've got it all figured out. They've made a ton of assumptions about what someone already knows. And we get to play the role of, well, actually, I don't know what you mean when you say this. So let's expand on that. Or can you give me a generic use case instead of your very specific corner case? And I know that you're going to help draw that information out of our future guests.
Absolutely. I worked for a startup previously that focused on AWS IAM and the challenges that it poses to sort of scalability and security, and because you can configure it very wrong. And we interviewed dozens of teams. And one of those teams, we said, you know, what are your challenges with IAM? Like the 20th team we interviewed, because everyone else said, I hate it. It's really hard. And they said, oh, we've solved that. And I was like, can you please tell me how? Because this whole startup is focused on doing what you have already figured out. So I think cross-pollination is my whole jam here. And I think that's what we can help people get to, is there are people out there that have solved the problems you are working on. And if we can bring those smart people together, you can copy their homework, just like high school, just like how I got through college. Let's do that.
Digging into your background, Kyler, you once sat for the CCIE Route Switch lab exam back in the day. So are you still a networking human?
I did, and I do, and I probably will. I was initially going to be a call center engineer. I've always had trouble figuring out what I'm going to be when I grow up. It's hard because everything is so interesting. And then a systems engineer, and then eventually networking, that I really loved because, ironically, I could hide away from people and just solve problems in the corner. I don't know how I got here with purple or blue hair. I got a whole bunch of Cisco certifications. I did the route switch track and wireless and security. They're all expired now, but most of that I internalized into my brain and eventually did consulting in the network sphere. And I saw the opportunity come along to work for a very cloud heavy customer. And I could see that, like, cloud is going to eat the world. And I think we all kind of see that. Like, you'll have the local access, you'll have your WAN and your Wi-Fi and stuff, but the primary backbone of the internet is, that's just cloud. It's going to consume everything. So I said, yeah, let's do it. And I was really worried cloud wouldn't be networking. That is so laughable looking back, because they didn't reinvent TCP/IP. They didn't reinvent BGP. It's there. It just has different names because AWS and Azure like to rename everything every 6 months. But it's all there. It's all very, very relevant. All of this network stuff is still just absolutely critical for understanding how computers work.
You started getting into cloud from a networking perspective. How did that translate into what you're doing now? Because I assume you're not just configuring networks all day long at the healthcare company.
No, it was really interesting. So Cisco calls itself a cloud-first company. I'd love to see the stuff that they're inventing and bringing about. But I initially was just configuring CSRs in the cloud, just VM CSRs.
Well, the cloud service routers.
Yeah, absolutely. And there are lots of VPNs, lots of router on a stick configurations, and it looked just like I was at home configuring something in the closet. But they also had these lambdas that you would change some VPN gateway flags and it would turn them on, and it just, you know, worked, which was really cool. And it used IAM to do so. And I didn't understand what any of those acronyms were, but I thought, I'm gonna, like, what if I want to start customizing it? So I started reading those lambdas and I started learning about IAM and I started writing about how to use schedule them using like SNS triggers. And eventually I was just accidentally a DevOps engineer because I wanted to figure out how this cool networking automation worked. And that worked well. Just being overtly curious about how does this work and go find out has been a really good career path for me so far. We'll see how it keeps working out.
Do you think of yourself as a networking person first these days? Or is that like you have this networking background that's helpful as you're now a cloud DevOps person?
I think it's a component, and I think it's a critical one that absolutely everyone needs. Even if you're just a .NET developer, you need to understand how networks work and how computers talk to each other. And you don't need to memorize BGP and the, you know, metrics and weight and stuff like that, but you need to understand that there are ephemeral ports and there's destination ports and there's listeners and how can you fill up all your TCP flows and stuff like that. So I see myself as a DevOps engineer that has too many hats, but one of those hats is I understand networking well enough that I can help the network team solve problems. And so I pretend that I don't as much as I can, because I don't want them to give me all the, you know, change tickets. But when stuff breaks, I can help. And I think that's really useful. As you get more senior, you start to pick up different hats and become competent at lots of things. When I talk about this in conferences or teaching people, I talk about this constellation of knowledge. And when you're first starting to pick out the little stars of what you know, none of them make any sense because they're not contextualized. They're not related. But as you become stronger and you have more points of knowledge, you start to be able to draw this map and derive stuff you didn't know before, because it's all related. It's all invented by, like, you know, a small number of people that are following the same patterns, and it's all built up from the same stuff. So in my mind, the more you learn, the more quickly you learn. When you're getting started, you think this is impossible. But as you get further along in your track, you're like, oh, I know how that works. That's how I would have built it. Cool.
That's one of the things I've definitely noticed over time, is just picking up on abstract patterns that are present in every programming language and every technology I touch. It's like, once you understand those fundamentals, then it's just, okay, what's the new syntax? What's the weird verbiage for their version of the thing? And the cloud has made that even more prevalent, because, like you said, Azure has their own names for things, and AWS has their own names, and GCP does. But if you look under the covers, they're all using the same basic technology. It's just they've named it a little bit different. And then there's these weird nerd knobs that you can tweak that they try to use as points of differentiation between the services. But at the end of the day, it's all using the same foundational technologies and the same patterns.
Yeah, absolutely it is.
Speaking of patterns, topics, and ideas, what interests you? What do you want to see Day 2 Cloud cover as you move into the role of co-host?
I think that's a great question. And the answer is everything, which is the most useless answer here. Because we were talking a little bit ahead of the show, Ethan and I were, that I'm interested in absolutely everyone's stories, because I think the most useful and expert folks that I've talked to, that have helped me the most to talk to, haven't come from traditional IT. They didn't just get IT degrees and work in IT systems. They've come from all over the map. I'm a librarian in a past life. Folks that have come from art, folks that have come from any other field that isn't technical, bring with them all this great history and context and viewpoints that I can't imagine, because that's the life that I've lived, is the only one that I know. Mm-hmm. So being specific is hard, but I'll do my best. I want to learn a lot more about Kubernetes and automation on top of that. I understand that there's like CNI automation, there's service automation with AWS, there's CNIs, there's Istio. There's all of these names that I only really know the names of, and I don't know how they work. And so as an engineer and as a curious person, I need to know that. I just don't have enough time to research it myself. So smart people, please come to the show and teach me how to do it. And you can help save me some time, and also maybe share your knowledge with everybody else too.
Yeah. Some of my favorite guests that we've ever had didn't just teach us about technology. They told us a story, either about themselves or about the technology, or ideally a little bit of both. And those are the episodes that really pull me in and keep me captivated the whole time, because I love that balance of the person. I mean, that's why you have a person on a podcast, and why they made these choices and how the technology developed. Because I can go read technical documentation and it's going to be very dry and pretty boring, unfortunately, but that's the way it is. Or I could talk to a human being that's going to make it come to life for me. And I think that's our ideal guest. So if you're out there and you have a great story about technology, that's the kind of person we want to talk to. I want to drill down a little bit into your story of being a librarian turned technologist, because as a little bit of background, my mom is a librarian. She went back to school and got her master's in library science. And one of the things that I noticed is the librarians she worked with were very technology forward. They were using Gopher and email back in the early 90s, before most people even knew what the internet was. So there's definitely like an undercurrent of technology in library sciences I'm curious if that's how you got on board to the technology train, or if there was another way that being in library sciences brought you to technology.
Yes and no. I only ever got a bachelor's degree. I was planning to go to Florida to get a master's, and then I chose computers. So this is as far as I went. But my thesis was on, since Google exists now and it helps you find information and libraries help you find information, is Google going to kill libraries? Because that was a concern early in the aughts. If Google exists, why would we ever go to libraries? The thesis that I wrote about was Google helps you find information in the same way librarians do, but they don't steer you towards what's the right information or why do you need this information, the sort of human element that we're trying to bring here to technology. And also, they provide a lot of other services that you don't just get from a computer. And we tend to forget that if you have reliable access to internet and a quiet, warm place to work and a desk that's clean and enough food to eat. And libraries provide all of these additional services that help people that couldn't otherwise be reached by just Google, by just technology services. So as much as I can, I've tried to bring that to this realm, bring this to computers and pull that information back. So just being like an openly, you know, queer person with blue hair, I get approached by women, people of color, people that are disenfranchised at work or outside work. And they say, like, I can't get anyone to listen to me, or I can't learn how to do this. There's no one that's approachable that I can find. And so I do my best to just bring that information to people and make it as accessible as possible. When you first come up in computers, you're Googling a lot and you're finding Stack Exchange. And the number one answer for Stack Exchange is, you're dumb to have asked this question. And it's like, yep. How it's dare true. You? I'm new. I didn't know. That's what I'm here to learn, is what should I be asking? And so when you come up with IT like that, when that's how you learn, which is how I learned that there are barriers here that exist for people like me that didn't already know, that didn't have a person to ask. So as much as I can, I'm loud. I want to be that person to ask. If you want to learn something, let me know and I can help, because I have privileges that I can use here to get to you and help you learn, because it'll change your life. The money and technology, the skills you'll learn, it'll change your life. And that's important.
And the friends you make along the way.
Absolutely.
I guess we're self-selecting biased group here, that all the coolest people we know are in tech. But they are, and it's true. That was an amazing answer, Tyler. But you didn't actually answer my question, which was, how did you get into tech?
Totally. So I was going through my college degree, and I was an IT major. And this was a little tiny college in Nebraska, Chadron State in western Nebraska. There was more cows than people outside. And because I grew up very rural in central United States. And they canceled the IT program. They closed it. There was no IT Wow. program, because there was only one professor, and I think he had been in and out. And so I found the easiest degree I could get on the internet that was fully IT. And again, librarians are very IT forward. Mm-hmm. And so I moved to somewhere larger where I could pursue computers a little bit better, and I got an online degree. And I eventually realized, I'll try to answer your question. I just love hearing myself talk. That's why I'm here at this podcast. Y'all can reel me in.
Indeed.
Since I was young, computers have made sense to me. They're highly logical systems that, you know, the plugs are even color-coded that should fit together. And that made me so happy that the world can make sense in those little boxes. And so I would just help farmers and stuff in this rural area and trade them brownies for computer fixes. And I thought, because I was in a very small town, I didn't have a lot of folks to talk to, that they just made sense to everyone. Like, computers just make sense, right? They're just logical. Just think about it. And come to find out, no, computers are pretty hard for a lot of people, especially if your day job isn't just fiddling with Outlook settings and Exchange and clouds and Terraform. So I got to college and I realized that they're foreign and confusing and complicated, and it's hard to know who to trust or what to do. And when I found out that computers, which had just revolutionized my life coming from farming to IT and college, I'm the first person in my family to go to college. I realized that this is something I can help people learn, because I like talking to people and computers make sense to me. And if I can teach this skill to people, if I can help them get there, their lives can change in the same way mine did. That's a really powerful motivator. And I think it's the only reason I've been successful. I've seen a lot of folks in IT wash out, because it's really hard to stay abreast of all this stuff and stay sharp, yes. Because it changes. I know several people that have quit and like opened a cupcake shop or a bakery or, you know, because it's like, I never want to touch a computer again. I have a gun in the corner to shoot the printer if it makes a noise I don't understand. It's you can really wash out hard of IT unless you have a motivation that makes it interesting or you're passionate about it. And that's helped me get there, is that I can help people change their lives if they learn this stuff.
Maximize cloud efficiency with Doit, the trusted partner in multi-cloud management for thousands of companies worldwide. Doit's innovative tools, expert insights, and smart technology make optimization simple. Elevate your cloud strategy and simplify your cloud spend. Visit Doit.com. That's Doit.com. Doit, your cloud simplified.
Yeah, certainly. The most successful people I've met in IT are the lifelong learners, the ones that just have this natural creativity and a desire to continuously learn about new things. I think it's interesting that you said computers made sense to you. And I had a very similar experience. Like, computers have always just made sense to me. When my parents plopped down the Franklin 1200 and I was like 9, I was immediately on there poking away, trying to figure out how everything turned on, how everything was put together. And it all just clicked really nicely for me. And then I also had a similar experience where I was like, oh, because my sister is very technologically inadept. She breaks everything she comes near, whether she means to or not. And so having to fix the things that she broke gave me my first taste of, oh, I like fixing things too when they're broken. And that definitely carried forward. And I think one of the key elements to that is not being afraid to break things in the first place. When I watch people who are less comfortable with technology try to fix a problem, they don't want to click in the wrong place or press the wrong button or enter the wrong thing because they're worried that they're going to break everything. And I don't know about you, but I've broken everything so many times that it's just like, yeah, no, things are going to break, but eventually we'll figure out how to put it all back together.
Yeah. My parents call me and say, you know, my phone's broken. Can you help? And I'm like, oh, I know exactly where that is. Because on my phone, I've hit every button. I've gone through it. I'm like, what does that do? I don't know. Let's find out. So just the power of chaos, the power of you clicking all the buttons is great. Yeah. You learn how stuff works. I encourage folks. I do a lot of like Terraform, cloudy stuff. Just read the Terraform page for what all the switches are, all the buttons you can hit for any resource, learn what they do. And it's going to start to make sense to you pretty quickly how the stuff works, because you can see how it can expand and how it can change. And that'll help you get there with anything, with fixing your phone, with building cloud stuff, with building databases, all of that.
I'd like to turn the tables a little bit, Kyler. And since you're now a co-host of Day 2 Cloud and Ethan is slowly stepping away from this particular microphone, but not all microphones, just this one.
Just this one, yeah.
Let's ask Ethan. Ethan, can you explain a little bit of the genesis behind the move away from Day 2 Cloud and what the future looks like for you?
Well, Packet Pushers as a company is growing. We're adding more podcasts and so on. I am co-owner of Packet Pushers, and so that's demanded a bit of my time, a lot of my time, actually. Doing podcasts is also a big deal. So, you know, trying to do heavy networking and Day 2 Cloud and newsletters and all the other content stuff, plus the business stuff, it all got to be a bit much. And, you know, Ned, as we talked, yeah, it'd be good for Day 2 Cloud to have a change too, you know, that came along. And you're like, I know a wonderful person. What if I ping her and see if she's interested in joining? Okay. You know, and so that worked out. So that lets me step aside and work on some of the business things. One of the things we want to deal with in Packet Pushers as a company is growth. Growth of audience. That is all these people who we'd love to have learned from our podcasts, all the podcast content that we have and the newsletters and the blogs and the videos. It's all for professional career development. We figured out that vendors will pay the bills. So people who want to learn don't have to pay anything. There's no subscriptions or anything like that. You can just sign up to listen to a podcast. Well, you don't even have to sign up. You just subscribe. Just hit the button. Now it shows up in your Apple Podcast or your Overcast or whatever your podcatcher is. You can go to YouTube and subscribe to the channel and get whatever content that we're putting out there. It's a good system, but we're finding that there's a lot of people that have no idea that Packet Pushers is out there, that Packet Pushers even exists. And so one of the things I'm going to be working on is content that are for folks who are just getting started in their career. People who are trying to get a handle on networking. Networking has been my specialty for a long, long time now. How do we reach those people? You know, a lot of the podcasts that, well, like what we've done on Day2Cloud historically, Ned, we tend to be talking to people who are a bit more experienced. They're a bit more senior in their roles. And when we're having a discussion about Kubernetes networking for someone who's expected to have had 10 or 15 years in IT, that could be a little difficult to access for someone who's brand new or they're still in college working through something. So I'm going to be working on content that is going after those folks, those that are out there just getting started. You had to come up with an IP addressing scheme. What does that even look like? And IPv6 is scary because look how long it is. My word, and there's letters in there. I don't want to, what? Okay, we're going to have all those conversations. And I've been working on content outlines and how that's going to look because Packet Pushers has never offered that before. We know that there's hundreds of thousands, even millions of people globally that are in that space. They're interested in Cisco CCNA certification, for instance, because they're just getting started. You know, we're not going to get into the CCNA training business because there's lots of that out there, but let's come up with some practical scenarios for people who are just getting started and how they would apply CCNA level knowledge to the real world. You know, that kind of content is the thing that I'm most interested in creating and been working on. Things that would complement their CCNA training, but not replace it, perhaps, mm-hmm. I think would be a good way to put it, Ned.
Wow. That was a very comprehensive answer.
You asked me the question, man. Don't criticize my long answer.
I am not. With all that in mind, it really did make a lot of sense that you draw down on some things while you ramp up other things, because all of us only have a certain number of hours in the day. And as you and I both know, having been podcasters for many years now, running and managing a podcast is not a small amount of work by any stretch of the imagination.
No. There's a lot to it. For any show that we've done, there was always some amount of research that went into it, reading to try to understand what's going on. There's trying to find the guest who has the expertise and then scheduling with them to come on board. There's doing the recording itself. And all of those things take many hours that go into every hour of podcast that you as a listener might listen to. There's a lot that happened in the background to make that thing exist. You think, oh, you just rock up to the mic with your buddies and hit record. No, actually, I wish. But in some podcasts, I suppose that is the format. But for a show like this that's technical and really trying to help someone who's an engineer and a professional, you know, give them something of value, that takes time to create that content. And it is, it's a significant amount of work.
We've talked to many people in the past that have said, oh, you know, I'm going to start a podcast. And, you know, we try to give a little bit of advice, but the general advice is good luck. I hope you get past 10 episodes.
Yep.
Let me know how that goes. Somewhere around 7 to 10 episodes is when people realize how much work it's going to be and they start running out of ideas for future episodes.
Yeah.
But I can say very fortunately, that is not a problem for Day2Cloud. There is no lack of ideas and topics that we can cover.
Kyler, like you were saying before, you know, what do you want to cover? Everything. And there's so much under the scope of everything that even if you narrow it down to just cloud and what that means. Are we talking public cloud or private cloud? Private cloud becoming more and more of a thing now. Are we talking Kubernetes or some other platform you want to run your workloads on? Are we talking VMs? Are we talking containers? Are we talking DevOps or are we talking platform engineering? Are we talking IAP? What are we talking about? There's all this nuance and difference and distinction. All these companies that are coming and going because of startup capital that was there for them and now it's run out maybe and they didn't quite make it. Merger and acquisitions going on. Oh, so-and-so bought so-and-so. What does that mean to you that's out there? It just never ends. The topics change. Then someone else comes up with a new big idea that seems to capture everyone's imagination. Like, oh, is this the next big thing we got to learn? Oh, do we all need to become developers now? Is that a thing? I got to become a developer? Yeah. Oh, wait, I got to learn how to use Git. I used to just like log into my server and configure it. No, now you're using Git. Well, why? What does that look like? Well, let's talk about infrastructure as code and version control and pipelines. It just never ends. It just keeps on going and going and going. And it's awesome. That's awesome that this stuff keeps evolving. And because it's endlessly fascinating. That's one of the things I'm going to miss about being a Day2Cloud co-host is the rapid fire technology evolution that was coming at me every week and just trying to keep up with what's going on. Kubernetes itself is a huge topic, and it's just one thing in the cloud landscape that is absolutely massive.
And changing everything. It is so exciting to see that I can replace a data center with a technology. And of course, you know, it's raccoons in a trench coat. It's dozens of tools wrapped up in one acronym. My country comes out sometimes. That's so exciting, that vision of the world that we'll have a technology and it's going to eat everything else. That is so exciting to talk about and think about. And what's next? I don't even know, but we're going to find out and we're going to tell you about it.
And the best part is, not only do we not know, but I couldn't even hazard a guess. Because if you asked me 5 years ago, what was going to be the breakthrough technology of 2023, generative AI was not going to be on my card. That was not on my list of things, you know? And, you know, 10 years ago, Kubernetes, what strange language are you speaking right now?
Then there's the contrarian viewpoints that are coming through now where people write articles. This is coming up increasingly. I don't know that we actually need Kubernetes. I think it's being too broadly applied. Everyone's using Kubernetes because they think they have to, when maybe they don't. Same thing with public cloud. Everybody moved into public cloud like that's the only story. That's the only game in town. When maybe for everybody that isn't the right thing, and there's other ways to think about it. And so you end up with those conversations too. We're all going here. Are we though? It's awesome. I love these conversations.
It's the long tail of technology, right? There are still mainframes and systems that are being maintained that are 50 or 60 years old. Mm-hmm. And then you have the new whiz-bang WebAssembly applications that are being deployed on Spin using Fermion or whatever. And I swear all of those are real words that actually correspond to real technologies and everything in between. And the fact that we get to talk to smart people about dope stuff is just an absolute dream that is even, you know, part of my job. And I'm so excited to bring on Kyler, who I know has the same passion for bringing out the stories and talking the tech that I do. And we're going to have a heck of an adventure.
Heck yeah, we are. And I'm excited we get to bring everyone along with us too, because this is going to be very exciting. We're going to learn so much.
So come join us on our future journey through Day 2 Cloud. I think that's a good place to wrap up. If folks are looking for you, Kyler, because you're new, where can they go and find more about you and read your awesome blog posts?
Totally. I am all over. Because I like to do all the things, of course. That's what we covered today. I have a bookmark site, kyler.omg.lol. And that is, in fact, a real website.
Nice.
Despite it sounding like a joke. And I have a Medium that you can read about, but just Kyler Middleton. I have a unique enough name that I'm easy to find on the Googles. So come down and learn about all the stuff. And of course, you'll find me on future episodes of Day 2 Cloud.
Awesome. Well, Ethan, this is your last episode. Is there anything you want to say as you mosey off into the sunset?
Thanks for all you cloud people for putting up with a network guy there. Because I know I drug you through some shows now where it's like, today we're talking about cloud and BGP. And you were like, okay. They were still good shows.
Never. Not at all. I still can't spell BGP, but it's fine.
Yeah, my thanks to everybody for letting me transition from Datanauts to this after Datanauts closed down. That was a fun adventure, and we enjoyed it. You're in good hands with Kyler, everybody. Good hands with Kyler. And I'll see you all on, of course, Heavy Networking and on YouTube. The Packet Pushers have a YouTube channel. Just search for Packet Pushers on YouTube. You'll find our channel and can subscribe there. In the coming months, there's going to be more content up there as well.
All right. So check all that good stuff out. And until next time. Just remember, cloud is what happens while IT is making other plans.